Representative Walter Hudson off the air, but I've been avoiding talking about anything that we've been discussing on the show just because I wanted to save it all for you. It's Twin Cities News Talk. My name is John Justice, producer Robbie, and Walter Hudson is in studio. So how are we holding up?
You know, this is that time of year where it takes a lot of stamina and endurance to fight for long hours on the House floor and sleep a little bit and get up and do it all over again. That's all this week. And I'm guessing it's going to be pretty much running it out until the end of session this way.
So I played the latest details as the alleged Minnesota DF felon, Nicole Mitchell, did return to the Capitol yesterday. But can you give us a bit of a recap? I know there were two motions designed to bar her from voting until the Senate Ethics Subcommittee had finished its investigation. What transpired yesterday upon the state senator's return?
Well, while all this drama was going down on the Senate side, we were on the House floor. And so we learned about it the same way you did through Twitter, even though we were in the same building. And from what I can garner, I mean, I think the top headline is it's war. Like, this is war at this point. Like, they have decided that they don't care at all about the integrity of the institution. She did not resign. They have not ejected her. And they're moving forward with all of their legislation as if nothing has happened. I mean, that's what we were dealing with on the House floor yesterday, is bill after bill after bill that won't get a single Republican vote in the Senate. So why are we even hearing it?
And go ahead, continue.
On the Senate side, my understanding is she showed up. She was part of the roll call. So that means that she can vote. Then she indeed exercised her ability to vote. Notice I don't say her right to vote, her ability to vote.
Right.
She exercised her ability to vote in order to cast, and it wasn't even a deciding vote. So there was a motion that was made to bar her from voting. I believe that's what the effect of it would have been. She didn't need to vote for that because in the event of a tie, 33-33, which is what it would have been without her, a motion fails, right? And so she could have recused herself from that vote and still had it fail and then still been able to go forward and be a voting member. But she decided to thumb her nose at all of us and at the institution by voting on a motion that directly affects her ability to vote.
Now, this would appear, at least in my opinion, to simply be to continue the attempt to cast this in such a way publicly as if to say you don't have all the information. I mean, she said as much in her second statement, saying that when we see the full context of what's played out, this will essentially be a different story than what you're being told. I don't know how, given the facts of what transpired, how you can contextually look at this and add any sort of justification for the actions that she did. However, her casting that vote would seem to me to perpetuate that idea of, you don't know everything, I'm going to continue just to do my job and act like nothing happened. I mean, she was greeted with hugs on the Senate floor when she arrived.
Yep. Yeah, she was welcomed with literal open arms by her Democrat colleagues. Listen, this is not just Senator Mitchell thumbing her nose at Minnesota and its people and the institution of the legislature. This is the entire Democratic Party doing the same. They are engaged in theatrical half measures. Oh, we pulled her from committee. How many committees do you think we have going on right now as we head towards the last month, the last 15 days of the legislative system? Not a whole lot.
Yeah.
Right. What was the other thing they did? Oh, she's not going to caucus with us. that's a meaningful punishment. I'll tell you what, punish me like that. That'd be fantastic, right? Just send me the cliff notes of what happens in caucus. That'll be totally fine. These quote unquote punishments or rebukes have no teeth and are completely meaningless, have no actual legislative impact on how things are going to go in the institution. But they welcome her. When you see them on camera, you get the real story. They welcome her with literal open arms. It's hugs and kisses. And here's your vote.
Well, and if the media was being was doing their job at all with this, and they've been covering it the way that they do. But if they were doing their job at all, you would see through what they did with what you're mentioning, these sort of half measures, because on the one hand, you're admitting that she's done something wrong here because we all know that she did something wrong. She admitted that she did something bad. And yet, through that admission, you're still allowing her to do, like, the most important thing that she can right. do in casting a vote.
Correct.
So apparently what she did really wasn't all that bad. I mean, I'm basically going back over what you said a moment ago. And let me add one more thing to this, because it dawned on me this morning. The left is constantly complaining about sort of the unequal justice, disproportionate accusations, disproportionate accountability, whether it's relating to systemic racism, whether it's relating to privilege. And yet here we have this example of an individual who suddenly now, in my opinion, is certainly receiving, you know, pretty hands-off treatment based off the allegations against her. It seems to me like she's using her privilege quite well in this situation of being a member of the DFL and having everybody, well, let due process play out. You know, so for a party that continually goes and points to this disproportionate accusations and accountability and privilege, they're certainly allowing her to have all of her privilege.
Well, it's all a lie. Like, they don't actually care about any of that.
Of course not.
They really don't. And we can get into, if you want to hear specific examples, really pointed examples of that from the House floor yesterday.
I want to talk briefly about there's a piece in the Star Tribune. This is written. This was in the Variety section. Laura Yen, Star Tribune, a columnist, writes opinions, exploring reported pieces, parenting, gender, family relationships. The headline of this piece was "The Bizarre and Relatable Case of Minnesota State Senator Nicole Mitchell." If the grief and trauma over losing her father is what led her to allegedly burglarize her stepmom's home, The legislator should say so. Senator Nicole Mitchell's political future seemed bright when she posed for family members on the first day of the legislative session back in January of 2023? I think it's first year, right?
Right. Yep.
What Nicole Mitchell did is bizarre, tragic, and unlawful. If the police narrative of her breaking into her stepmother's home prevails, the state senator's apparent failed heist of her father's ashes and other belongings likely spells the end of her political career. But the emotions behind it, I understand them. You don't know what happened. She doesn't know what happened with this. Stop acting like you do. Maybe you understand. Perhaps you do, but you don't know exactly what happened. But this is how it's being framed here. She spends like five paragraphs giving examples of other individuals who have lost loved ones in order to attempt to try to bring about a sense of sympathy that we may want to have on Nicole Mitchell for these alleged actions. But this is the kind of quality reporting that you get from our local media.
Yeah, it's really deeply offensive. I mean, to the extent that her specific circumstance of having lost her father, having lost a loved one, to the extent that that is relatable, it's extraordinarily offensive to then turn around and suggest that that somehow exonerates or provides some sort of moral cover for the decision to burglarize your own mother. Okay. So what I would say is that every single person who has gone through a similar loss and hasn't turned around and committed a felony, like, what are we supposed to say about that? Like, it occurs to me that that's the person we should be lifting
up
and calling relatable, not the person who decided to descend into madness and trespass upon and violate her own relative.
The article goes on to say, trauma after losing a loved one can make a person act out of character, if not out of their mind. And an Air National Guard officer, former meteorologist, lawyer, single mom, and staunch defender of children's rights, this promising first-term DFL legislator had everything to lose.
We know she wasn't acting out of character because she's exhibited character in the week since. She has contradicted the sworn criminal complaint offered against her. She has suggested that the police are lying, which they would have absolutely no reason to do. And not just that they lied in the general sense, but that they committed perjury, which is what they would have had to do in order to submit a criminal complaint that contains intentional misleading or incorrect or false information. That's what she's done. So she has demonstrated that on the face of it, it would certainly appear to be a lie on her part. I mean, there's certainly more evidence that she's lying than that the police are lying.
Sure.
Somebody is. One of those two things is true. Either Senator Mitchell is a liar, or all of the authorities responsible for arresting and prosecuting her are liars. One of those two things is true. I know where I'm putting my money. Okay. So she has the character, assuming that's true, to not only burglarize her own mother, but then turn around and lie about it first chance she gets after being released from jail, and then has the audacity to show up to the Capitol and cast votes in disgrace without shame. That's her character. And here's the Star Tribune trying to paint her as relatable. It is abhorrent. The Star Tribune owes the people of Minnesota an apology for this disgusting piece of rhetorical smoke bomb.
Not that I want to anger you anymore, but just another point from this. Yen in the Star Tribune goes on to say, blended families can sometimes carry complications when a parent dies. When did things go wrong between Mitchell and her stepmom? We don't know. Mitchell's father married Carol in 83, and the legislator has said in a statement that she's known her stepmom since she was 4 and deeply cares about her. On her Facebook, 2 days after the alleged burglary, she posted an update about the incident, saying that she was conducting a welfare check on a family member who's been struggling with Alzheimer's and paranoia. Mitchell contends a much different picture will emerge when all of the facts are known. I am so curious to know what that other picture is that could possibly put this in any other light than what we see right now.
Well, come on, John. Who hasn't done a welfare check at 4:30 in the morning dressed in all black with a flashlight contained in a sock, lying on the floor of the bedroom of the person you're checking on just to make sure that they can't see that you're checking on their welfare, and then been tripped over by said person? Yeah, it's the story is strange credulity to the point of absolute zero, and yet is being taken seriously by the Star Tribune, which, by the way, let's make the point, it does bear saying, is owned by a Democrat operative with ties to Governor Walz. I mean, this whole thing is so corrupt and so disgusting, and the people of Minnesota deserve better. And then you have Senate Majority Leader Aaron Murphy talking to the press yesterday, having the audacity to appeal to principle as the reason why she's allowing this to happen. Oh, the people of Woodbury deserve to be represented. Yes, they deserve to be represented by somebody who is not credibly accused of committing a felony against their own relative.
Yeah.
So you know how you affect that? You eject her and you have a special election and you get somebody who has the decency to not appeal to their own grief as an excuse to trespass and violate against somebody who's close to them. You get somebody like that in there, somebody who has basic human dignity and decency.
And there's a win, and this shows you, you know, it tells you so much about where the DFL is and what the individuals that support them, that are serving in the legislature, you know, what they actually feel and believe. Because there's a win in what you just described.
Correct.
There's a total win in what you just described. And everybody on the left, on the DFL and the Democrat side, would applaud that. They would say, good job. That's what you should do. Probably use it to push back against whatever nonsense they want to against the right, and especially during this legislative session with what you are all supposed to be specifically focused on.
Correct.
They still get legislative wins out of this, and yet what do they do? Everything but.
Listen, the point you are making is so critical for people to understand. Not only would this be an absolute political win for them to do the right thing in this moment, there's also pretty much nothing to gain by doing it the wrong way.
Exactly.
Right? Like, the way they're going about doing this, they've already accomplished the lion's share of their legislative agenda for the term. I mean, the things that are left over, a handful of, and don't get me wrong, the stuff that we're debating right now, when we debated yesterday, is of extraordinary importance. And it's certainly in line with their rights violating agenda and their base immorality. But at the same time, like, you could claim the win. You could take the W, right? Like, you have achieved your agenda to this point. You got 15 days left in the session. What is truly lost by saying, you know what, guys, we're going to slow our roll a little bit. We're going to do the right thing. We're going to spin this as, look at the Democrat Party. Look at how we hold our people accountable while the Republicans have a convict for a presidential case. Like, I could write this narrative for them, okay? And it would work really, really well. But it's not that they're too stupid. It's not.
No.
They are too arrogant.
Uh-huh.
They cannot dare to show, even for a moment, the self-awareness required to fess up to this being a misstep on their part.
And that's what they stand to lose, the ability to do the very thing they're doing.
Yes, that's exactly right.
They lose the ability to be the monsters that they're being, because that's who they are.
Yes, 100%. This is not just Senator Nicole Mitchell's character on display for all to see. It is the Democrat Party in Minnesota. It is their character collectively on display, and they're each individually responsible for it.
I had this sort of epiphany. I had a shower epiphany this morning, and I was running through the topics in my head, getting prepared to drive in this morning. And once again, as a talk show host doing this for 28 years, I've gone through this process and I've come full circle on this. And what I mean by that is, you have this event that happens on the left. You look at it through the lens, through my core of what I believe in. And I go, that's wrong. That person should be held accountable. They shouldn't be serving in this position. Every justice. Justifiable argument as to why that individual should not be in a position to represent the people who voted for them. And I came full circle and I went, however, I have to remember the enemy that we're dealing with, and they do not care.
Yes.
They do not care. So all of my common sense, rational, good, evil, black and white, I can just go ahead and just toss that, or just let it go down the drain as I, you know, shower out the soap in my hair, because there's no reason of trying to go and look at that, because the opposition doesn't give a rip.
This is the red pill that we all need to take. You need to come to the understanding that these are legitimately, this is not political rhetoric, like, legitimately and objectively, these are bad people. They are not good human beings, and they don't care about you or your rights or your dignity or your life at all. And that, it's only when you accept that as true that their actions make any sort of sense whatsoever. Like, if that's the premise that you're operating from, then as you observe their actions, you can go, yep, that makes sense. Yep, that makes sense, because it's true.
What we're looking at, or what are we looking at in terms of what's left in the legislative session in items to be voted on? I will have Rob Doerr on the show tomorrow from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, but I know that we are looking at some gun controls that are that are being moved forward on. And again, point needs to be made, not that it's matters all that much based on our conversation, but the point needs to be made that this individual who's been accused of first degree burglary could be casting deciding votes on your ability to arm yourself and how those arms are actually stowed in your home. So what are we looking at that's left?
Well, you nailed it. I mean, that's it, right? So in the wake of one of their senators being credibly accused of burglarizing her own mother and being found in the bedroom lying on the floor like a creep, getting tripped over, okay? A week from that, like, and I want to emphasize this. This Monday was really the first legislative calendar that they were able to put together in the wake of Senator Mitchell, right? Like, the way things time out, Monday was the first day that they were able to say, you know what, here's what we're going to do next after this story. And what did they choose? They chose three gun control bills that impose upon your capacity to defend yourself in exactly the scenario that Senator Mitchell engaged in. All right. That's what they chose to do. And so we debated that last night. Only one of the bills was able to pass. The two others were tabled. They'll probably be taken up later this week. And so that's what you're dealing with. Again, going back to their character and who they are, arrogant, tilting against your rights, don't care at all about the integrity of the institution, and also total moral hypocrites. So here's something that happened last night. The party that likes to appeal to the 1619 Project and talk about America's original sin,
okay,
the party that likes to preach about inequity amongst racial groups, they voted as a block along party lines to authorize the buying and selling of human beings in the year 2024. Okay, we call it, what? We call it, I get it.
What?
I understand. I get it. So let me back up and explain.
Okay. Okay.
Because you're thinking there's no way that's possible.
All right, hold on a second. Do you have some time? You got like a okay. We're going to stop there.
Is that a good tease for you?
Yeah, that was a tease. That was your tease. We're just going to leave it right there. Don't go anywhere. 651-989-5855. Leave a talk back if you're listening on the iHeartRadio app. I have questions.
I have answers.
State Representative Walter Hudson will provide those coming up. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Twin Cities News Talk. Hour three for a Tuesday. Twin Cities News Talk. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. My name is John Justice, producer Robbie, State Representative Walter Hudson hanging out a little bit longer this morning before we get back to the latest, including what took place last night in St. Paul. Let's get to a few comments from the iHeartRadio app this morning.
I want to thank Representative Hudson for all that he does. And I know he's trying to be polite when he uses the terminology thumbing her nose. But my terminology is she just gave middle finger to the state for all those people that believe in the rule of law.
Go to one more here. A point that's been made, but it's good
morning,
to make it again.
Gentlemen, I love the show. Say, with the Nicole Mitchell thing, I'm just curious. I'm a retired Army colonel. And if I were to have been caught doing something similar, immediately my security clearance would be revoked, which would prompt an investigation and potentially get me kicked out of the military. Is Nicole Mitchell still in the military?
Yeah, that's a question I haven't heard answered yet. I don't know if you have an answer to that, Walter.
I do not, but the point stands, and it's a point that's been made by several people, and whether you're pointing to, you know, somebody who works at a school or somebody who works, I mean, pretty much anywhere, right? Like, you do something like this, you're going to be facing immediate disciplinary action on the job. Potentially, I mean, you could be fired, certainly suspended with pay, without pay. Certainly, you're not going to have access to responsibilities for other people that are sensitive, that require character, right? Representative Ben Bakeberg made this point. He's a school principal down in Jordan. He said that if this were him, not only would he be on administrative leave, they would change the locks. Like, he wouldn't be able to get into the building and have access to those kids. And yet here we are with a senator who is credibly accused and has been arrested for and charged with first degree burglary of her own mother. And not only does she still have keys to the Capitol, she's got a vote that impacts 6 million Minnesotan lives.
Well, think about what we do every time law enforcement gets involved in a shooting.
Yep.
They immediately put them on administrative leave.
You got it.
Instantly. It's just like, even if it's clear as day.
Yep.
Even if it's clear as day, they did nothing wrong. It's just, it's part of the procedure. That's how things should be.
And again, it would only be a win for them. It would only be a win from them politically to hold her to that standard. And then they could sit there and point at themselves and be like, look at us, look at our integrity, look at how principled we are. Yeah, we could have been heavy-handed, but we chose to put the institution above our political agenda. And again, still be able to stand upon everything that they've passed to date in this term, which is, again, the lion's share of what they set out to do. It costs them nothing practically legislatively, but they're just not responsible enough to do that. Their arrogance won't allow it.
Well, and it almost goes the other way at this point. And I do want to get to what happened last night before we have to let you loose. And for those just now catching up, again, we're talking about the alleged Minnesota DF felon, State Senator Nicole Mitchell, who has been charged, as Walter mentioned. This goes back from not this past Monday, but the Monday prior, right? Yeah. Or was it just this week? No, we're on Sunday.
It's been 1 week, believe it or not.
Okay, yes. All right. So who was charged for breaking into her stepmother's home through the basement window, allegedly to steal back some items that she was unable to retrieve because she's had a falling out with the stepmother. So I wanted to get everybody back up to speed on this. Let's go to the phone calls real quick. Brian, it's a constituent of yours out of St. Michael. Good morning, Brian. You're on Twin Cities News Talk with Walter Hudson.
Hey, Walter. You know my brother and sister-in-law, John and Pearl. I have three kids in the Navy. One is actually my daughter's fiance, and we're looking very closely at this situation, specific to that talkback. She actually represents the U.S. Air Force Reserves, not the National Guard, from that article in the Star Tribune. The U.S. Air Force Reserve is run by the Department of Defense. Who runs the Department of Defense? And that's a concern of mine, right? The Democrats run the DOD. Could that be a twist on this?
I don't know. I mean, I appreciate the suggestion. I don't know enough to be able to competently comment on that.
Well, and the point that I wanted to make was, so they're not doing the right thing in going for the win, right, in holding her accountable, which the left would go and applaud. And at this point, it's almost as if it seems as if they're trying to take advantage of what she did, saying, we don't care. We're going to continue to use this controversy because this is how powerful we actually are and what we can do. That's right. The impression that I get is that they're actually going and saying, not saying they're glad that she did it, but hey, she did it. Let's just go ahead and use it to our advantage. We still have the power. We're not going to hold her accountable. We're just going to keep ramming things through.
Yeah, it's an intimidation display.
There you go. Yeah.
That's what it is. It's we have the power and we're going to use it. And we don't care whether you like it or not.
So what happened last night? You set up the tease nicely. I'm definitely curious. So what took place?
So again, the party of the 1619 Project, the party that is constantly pointing back to the quote unquote original sin of America and is constantly talking about our racial sin and racial reckoning and harkens back to chattel slavery and Jim Crow. Last night in the year 2024 on party lines, the Democrats voted to authorize the buying and selling of human beings. Now, it's called surrogacy, and there is a way that this is done that is legitimate. So when couples are looking to have children and they, for whatever reason, are incapable of doing it themselves, they might enlist the help of a relative or a friend or someone to carry the child. That's one thing. What we're talking about is we're talking about spending money, paying people to rent out their wombs so that you can create a child so that you can have it. All right. That's what we're talking about. There were amendments to this bill last night. There were a couple of them. I believe they were both brought by Harry Niska. One of which would have said that you at least have to be, like, the people involved at least have to be American citizens. And the idea behind that was, well, what we don't want to have happen is people starting to bid on folks from outside the country who are desperate, where the money goes a long way.
Right.
So therefore exploiting and taking advantage of the most vulnerable people on earth. Hey, we'll rent out your womb and change your life. Right. The other thing that, the other amendment that he attempted to make on this is that we're not going to allow for profitable consideration. In other words, you can't make money by doing this, by creating people. And they voted that down. So listen, this is who we're dealing with. And by the way, you want to know what's really behind this? Why are we talking about surrogacy now in 2024? Why is it all the rage? Well, Representative Lee Finke got up and told us this is a win for the queer community.
Of course.
Okay. So just to be clear, just to be super duper clear, We now live in a state of affairs where it is official Democrat Party policy to rent out wombs and buy people so they can accessorize two guys who want to play house. That's where we're at.
What time did this transpire last night? Like, how late was it? Out of curiosity.
It wasn't that late. It was like, I don't know, 10, 9, 10, okay. Somewhere in there.
You have reporters there. They're covered.
You're so cute.
They're covered. They're covered. I know. I just, it's that mind of mine thinking this seems like this would be a newsworthy item to run this morning in the wake of all the other items that are covered daily.
And again, the Star Tribune is owned by a Democrat campaign operative with ties to Governor Walz. You do not live in a republic where there are objective institutions engaged in good activity upholding your rights. That is not your situation. You live in a captured republic, a banana republic, that is conspiring daily to deprive you of your rights from conception to death.
Yeah.
That's their goal. That's their project. Their whole project is consuming you, taxing you, restricting you, dominating you, punishing you, while they get to do whatever they want, literally whatever they want.
State Representative Walter Hudson, as always, I appreciate the time. Godspeed to you as you head to St. Paul. I'll be in touch between now and then and look forward to having you on the show again next week. Thank you.
Thanks.